Listen local.
From WJFF.
From the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, rural caregivers in upstate New York are stressed, cutting work hours or even leaving jobs because they don't have enough help. That's according to a new AARP New York survey. We'll learn more about the lack of adequate state funding for upstate rural counties for basic home services for older adults. What's scarier than bats this Halloween? The spotted lanternfly. We'll speak with the Wayne Conservation District's forest specialist about research into whether this invasive species can help kill another invasive species, the tree of heaven. The Common Good, a new bookstore in Ellenville that not only carries books but also aims to be a community hub where folks can congregate, collaborate, connect, and unwind. We'll meet the owner. And what does it mean to belong? On Belonging is a series of short plays. We'll hear more. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The Harris and Trump campaigns are looking to the Southwest today. They'll hold dueling events in the swing states of Arizona and Nevada. NPR's Ben Giles reports former President Donald Trump will make a third stop in New Mexico.
Trump will host afternoon rallies in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and the Las Vegas suburbs before joining Tucker Carlson and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in Glendale, Arizona, for an event billed as a benefit for hurricane relief. Vice President Kamala Harris will be joined by running mate Tim Walz for a Get Out the Vote rally in concert in Phoenix. Later this afternoon, she'll head to Reno to rally support in northern Nevada. With only a few days before the election, this may be the last chance for both Harris and Trump to deliver their closing arguments in two states that could help secure an Electoral College victory on Tuesday. Ben Giles, NPR News.
Humanitarian groups say conditions for Palestinians in northern Gaza are horrific. One of the last working hospitals there has been raided and some of the staff arrested. NPR's Hadil Al-Shelchi reports the Israeli military is intensifying its operation there.
Airstrikes are also getting worse. A few days ago, the military struck a five-story building in the town of Beit Lahia. It was full of families of displaced Palestinians. And the Ministry of Health said at least 93 Palestinians were killed or missing, and that at least 25 of the killed were children. The Israeli military said that that incident was, quote, being looked into. And the thing is, last week, the Israeli military demanded that Gaza first responders leave Beit Lahia. So civilians ended up pulling people out of the rubble themselves and burying the killed in the street.
NPR's Hadil Al-Shelchi reporting. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and Secretary of State Antony Blinken will join a meeting today with their South Korean counterparts at the State Department. This comes as officials from both countries say North Korea has test-fired an intercontinental ballistic missile today. Officials in Japan say this ICBM's flight lasted the longest and reached the greatest height than any other North Korean test missile. Stocks opened lower this morning as the Commerce Department reported cooling inflation in the U.S. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell about 160 points in early trading.
According to the Commerce Department's inflation yardstick, which is closely watched by the Federal Reserve, prices in September were up 2.1% from a year ago. That's close to the Fed's inflation target of 2%. Stripping out food and energy prices, which bounce up and down a lot, so-called core inflation was 2.7% last month. Employers' cost for workers is growing more slowly. Labor costs in September were up 3.9% from a year ago. That's a modest slowdown from the previous year. We'll get a report card tomorrow on October hiring. It's likely to be somewhat distorted, though, by the ongoing strike at Boeing, as well as hurricanes, which disrupted business in the Southeast. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR. Aircraft maker Boeing and its striking machinists union have restarted contract talks. The union has been on strike for nearly 2 months. The machinists have rejected two proposed Boeing contracts. A semiconductor research facility in upstate New York has been named one of three national technology centers. As NPR's Eva Pukach reports, the facility is earmarked to receive up to $825 million in federal funding.
The center, located in Albany, New York, will focus on research into semiconductor technology known as extreme ultraviolet lithography. The Biden administration has pushed for semiconductor manufacturing to be produced domestically to increase competition with rivals like China. Since the Chips and Science Act passed in 2022, the federal government has invested billions into the construction or expansion of semiconductor fabrication facilities across the country. The U.S. Commerce Department has not yet announced the location of the other two national technology centers. Ava Pugach, NPR News.
Police in Los Angeles say some crowds turned unruly after the Dodgers won the World Series last night. They beat the New York Yankees 7-6 in New York. L.A. police say some people broke into stores and a bus was set on fire. Officials say 12 people were arrested. The Los Angeles Dodgers took the series 4-1. Dodgers slugger Freddie Freeman was the series MVP. He had 4 home runs in 5 games. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting books, radio, podcasts, film, television, theater, and more to bridge science and the humanities. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Family caregivers in the Mid-Hudson Valley are stressed and believe the state should do more. That's according to a new AARP New York survey. The survey of voters 40 and older in Dutchess, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, Sullivan, Ulster, and Westchester counties paints the same picture as the rest of the state, where family members shoulder much of the responsibility for keeping an aged loved one at home, while all too often doing so without the support they need from state government. Here with more from AARP is David McNally, AARP New York's Senior Director of Advocacy. David, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Tell us more about this survey. I briefly touched on it. What is going on in terms of state funding, and why is the state doing more?
All right. So there are thousands of people at home who need services to stay at home. These are people that if we keep them at home, that means they don't have to go to a nursing home, which is somewhere that very few want to go to, and frankly, costs the state a lot more money. There are thousands and thousands of people waiting for services like meal delivery, a little personal care, rides to doctors. These are essential activities that people need assistance with in order to stay in their home. And last year, the legislature added $9 million. Because it wasn't going to end all the waiting list, but it was going to help an awful lot. And this year, the governor proposed not putting that $9 million back in. So we spent a significant part of our advocacy efforts during state budget trying to get them to put the $9 million back in that they put in last year, which we were successful in doing. However, that still left about $42 million needed in order to provide the State Office for Aging, which in turn provides it to your local county offices on the aging to provide these services. It still left us needing $42 million, so there's nobody waiting at home.
And folks are waiting, basically. There's at least, 16,000 folks, according to the state's records?
Yes. There are thousands of people waiting. The most recent waiting list data we have is from the spring, so these things do change. People, unfortunately, die waiting for these services, or they go into a nursing home where they no longer need the services, or new people get added. So it's a moving target. But the last data we have shows 16,000 across the state, including 23 in Sullivan County, 678 in Ulster County, and 349 in Orange County. So that's over 1,000 requests for services that were not filled this spring in those three counties. And as I said, people either die, unfortunately, waiting to get the services they need, or they are usually forced to get into a nursing home. And these services can cost a few thousand dollars each, which is a lot less money than what the state will pay in Medicaid for, 130,000-ish, give or take, for a nursing home for a year. So it makes great economic sense to the state to fully fund these programs, as well as it's the right thing to do for the constituents.
And what is why is the state not putting more money into this effort?
That's a good question. And I urge all your listeners to call their state legislator and the governor and ask.
It's all about priorities. When you have a $236 billion with a B budget, and you're not fully funding these programs for older middle-class New Yorkers who have, you know, paid their bills all their lives, paid their taxes all their lives, and now need a little extra help to stay in their homes, and it doesn't seem to raise to the level of a priority to make sure it gets done, that's an excellent question to be asking legislators and the governor.
Your survey also...
I don't have a good answer.
Yeah. Your survey also mentioned that 70% of rural caregivers that are working with older adults are being stressed. They feel stress. Talk a little bit more about those findings.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, most people at some point in their lives will care for a vulnerable older relative, and they often have to balance work and other responsibilities. You know, I'm going to paraphrase Rosalind Carter here. Everybody has either been a caregiver, is caregiving, will be a caregiver, or will need caregiving themselves. So everybody has a stake in this, whether it was in the past, current, or in the future. And many New Yorkers work, it's physically, emotionally, and financially hard. They've had to, there's about 2 million people in New York who provided essential daily unpaid support for a loved one, most of them older relatives. And the financial burden of being a family caregiver can be considerable. And it only adds to the stress. Now, in our survey of the Hudson Valley, more than half of the registered voters, 40 and older, they either were or are now caring for a parent or an older loved one. And 70% of caregivers say they feel stressed, while almost 1 in 5 believe New York State doesn't offer enough for the home and community-based services that could alleviate that stress. And nearly all of them have incurred some expense while providing care, such as transportation to doctors, appointments, or purchasing wheelchairs and other medical equipment. So, and 80% of the respondents thinks it's important to increase the funding. So, again, I'm not sure what more we can be doing to convince the state and our elected officials that this is the right thing to do. As you said, more than 70% of rural caregivers report being stressed, and of the 70% who work, 62% have adjusted their schedules. Almost 1 in 5 have dropped to part-time. And over 1 in 10 left their job to help an older loved one. So there is emotional, financial stress on the family caregivers.
It really does seem like it's a challenge for those caregivers, a challenge of meeting this crisis in the moment, because folks want to be able to, these folks, you know, intentionally want to be able to help, but they're sometimes tearing their hair out with these adequate resources. And then the result could be putting a loved one in a nursing home, but they find that a difficult thing to face as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, we got an election next week, and there's still time to be asking anyone who's on the ballot where they stand on supporting family caregivers, both at the federal level, where there's plenty that could be done, and here at the state. And this is one way to support family caregivers. So, and in the rural areas of New York, it is particularly challenging, but frankly, the survey numbers are very similar across the state. Whether you live in urban, suburban, or rural New York, it may be a different kind of challenge. Like when you talk about transportation, the transportation challenges in the rural area where there is very little options, those are challenges. But in urban areas, there are challenges on transportation too, but they're different. They're like access to mass transit. Can you get it? Can you afford it? So, the issues they resonate across the state, but this particular survey that we pulled out, it was specific to the rural caregivers.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to David McNally, the AARP New York Senior Director of Advocacy, about a new AARP New York survey that shows rural caregivers in upstate New York are stressed. They're cutting work hours or even leaving jobs because they don't have enough help, and they're not getting enough state funding for basic home services for older adults. David, what more is AARP New York doing to press state lawmakers to, you know, increase funding?
Right. Well, again, we've tried to elevate the needs of the family caregiver during this election cycle. We've been asking candidates questions about how they propose to better support family caregivers, both at the federal and the state races. We have our volunteers out pushing the legislators who are currently in office to make sure this is a top priority next year and that it doesn't get forgotten. Unfortunately, in previous years, it seems like it was taken care of after what they termed more important issues, or they didn't term more important, but more priorities were taken care of first, the big things in Albany that take up a lot of money. And that we've been told that, well, you know, we have to wait until we see what's left in order to fund these programs. Like, why is that? Why isn't this a priority? Why isn't this one of the first things you fund? So I'm encouraging everybody in the last few days here, if you haven't heard from your candidates for state and federal office where they stand on supporting family caregivers, give them a call and ask them, because it's, you've got their attention this time of year. I might also mention, we also just released a report about voter participation and turnout. And in the Hudson Valley, in 2022, 63% of voters were 50-plus. As opposed to the under 50, which was 36. So older voters turn out in much greater number. So here's a chance, and much greater percentages, here's a chance to have your voice heard on this issue of as a voter.
Yeah, your report shows that those New York voters, 50 plus, play an outsized role in elections. You mentioned talking to candidates in the New York local level. At the national level, Vice President Harris is saying she aims to help adult caregivers with a Medicare benefit that would expand those benefits to cover costs of long-term home care. And former President Trump said that his campaign is promising a tax break for family caregivers. Are you seeing that these policies at the national level are adequate to help with closing this gap?
Well, we're very excited to hear the national candidates talking about ways to better support family caregivers and their loved ones. We really feel like we are breaking through, that it has risen to that level that of this discussion. We're very excited to see proposals being made at the federal and the state level. And certainly there are a number of bills that are currently pending in Congress that we support, including ways to make it easier for family caregivers and in some ways to give them some financial support. But it's been very exciting for us to see that finally at the national level, we have candidates talking about how to better support family caregivers.
And again, your report about voting shows that New York voters 50 plus, regardless of their party affiliation, are most likely to show up at the polls, as they have in the last four election cycles, presidential, congressional, and gubernatorial. That's notable since 2016. There's been a steady rise in New York voters across all age groups who've chosen not to enroll in any party. So with this block of voters representing a huge representing an outsized role and turnout in New York, what's your message to them in the final days of the election?
Get out and vote. Learn where the candidates stand on supporting family caregivers. And then use your right. Everybody needs to vote and to be thinking about how your vote will help the family caregiver is important. And also to spread the word about this to your family and friends. Two out of three voters in 2022 were over 50 plus. Those people are either, again, currently receiving care or they're being a caregiver themselves. But I will also a message to the under 50. As I said, you're either a caregiver now, you will be, you have been, or you're going to need care, or more, or someone in your family, a loved one like a parent, is going to need it. So this is not just about the 50 plus, as important of a voting block as it is. The family caregiving issue is important to people of all ages. And I will say, as we've been out in the community, we are learning more and more about the struggles of young people who are caring for their parents or people that are trying to care for both their children and their parents. So this is an issue that needs addressing at the state and the federal level. This money to stop these waiting lists will help immeasurably the people that are need the care, the people that are trying to be their family caregivers, and it will save the state money. The State Office for Aging themselves, an agency of an office of the governor, says for every $15 million spent on these on these services, it saves the state $50 million in Medicaid. So do the math, right? If they put another $80 million, $50 million in here, you could be saving Medicaid on the other end $100 million or more. So it makes economic sense. It makes political sense. It most importantly makes the most sense for the family caregiver and the people they are trying to care for.
That's David McNally, the AARP New York Senior Director of Advocacy. There are more resources for family caregiving at AARP.org. David, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, a wicked plan to have one invasive species try to kill off another. We'll learn more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
On the TED Radio Hour, clinical psychologists John and Julie Gottman are marriage experts. And after studying thousands of couples, they have found...
couples who were successful had a really different way of talking to one another when there was a disagreement or a conflict.
How to be brave in our relationships. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9, here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Turns out the Tree of Heaven is not so heavenly. It's an invasive plant from Asia that grows quickly in natural areas and backyards, taking over habitats intended for native species. Its ecosystem impacts go far beyond that of just plants. And the Tree of Heaven is native host to the invasive and destructive spotted lanternfly. That's that visually striking insect that colonizes quickly. We've talked about that. It destroys just as fast. Now, get this. Researchers are examining if a natural fungus that kills the Tree of Heaven could be spread to other trees of heaven by the spotted lanternfly. How wicked. Joining us with more is Trevor. Say your last name for me, please.
Kuchitlowski.
I didn't want to butcher it. Wayne Conservation District's Forest Specialist. Trevor, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Now,
pleasure.
Let's talk about this Tree of Heaven. I don't know it very well, but it is an invasive tree plant. Can you tell folks a little bit more about what it is, what it looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. You hit the nail right on the head. So Tree of Heaven, also known as Ailanthus altissima, is an invasive species from East Asia. And for those of you who live in the area, you might already be familiar with one of our native species, staghorn sumac. They look very, very similar to one another, except, of course, one is native and very important to our local ecosystems, and one is horribly invasive. And as you already mentioned, it's a host tree for spotted lanternfly, which is its own problem in its own right.
Well, we've been talking about the spotted lanternfly for a few years now. It was first found in Pennsylvania in 2014. It's since spread throughout and has, you know, in some places put areas in a quarantine to prevent further spread. That's that spotted lanternfly again, the one that looks kind of pretty, but the advice is to kill it. But what's so interesting, what we're talking about here, is that this invasive Tree of Heaven is like the host for this plant or this fly, spotted lanternfly. So how is it that a natural fungus could help possibly kill the Tree of Heaven?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. So spotted lanternfly does rely very heavily on Tree of Heaven. They exist in the same natural range as one another. So of course, those two species have kind of co-evolved to rely on one another. And seeing that a lot of our native species aren't exactly super desirable to spotted lanternfly, they really tend to gravitate towards these trees. And you know, one of the things is, a lot of times whenever you're dealing with an introduced pest, whether it's an insect or a tree or whatever it might be, oftentimes our biological controls, sometimes those that are introduced or those that exist naturally, they take a little bit of time to catch up. But oftentimes you'll find that over time, you know, native bird species will start to feed on spotted lanternfly or other pests and diseases will catch up to them. And, you know, with this fungus, this is one of those instances where you have something that is kind of working in our favor.
So what is the idea here? Is that these lanternflies will, you know, continue to colonize on these trees with this fungus? Is it being introduced naturally, or are scientists sort of trying to, like, goad it along?
So as far as I'm aware, the fungus is entirely native. And, you know, a lot of times when it comes to the spread of fungus, the spores are very, very small, and oftentimes they hitch a ride on insect species that are jumping between these trees. This is something that we've seen very frequently just throughout history in general. I mean, even with American elm, that was a species that was lost primarily due to a fungal blight, but it was spread as a result of beetles. So that being said, the soil-borne fungus, the nice thing about it is that it attacks the tree's roots. And if the spotted lanternflies are kind of serving as a vector, as I mentioned before, they're very adept at seeking these species out. And hopefully this native fungus will kind of hitch rides on the spotted lanternfly, jump from tree to tree, and hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, there's always a lot of different factors in these things, help kind of reduce their populations. And regardless of the biological controls that are in place, that's ultimately the key. I mean, getting rid of Tree of Heaven won't entirely eliminate spotted lanternfly. They are separate issues, even though they are connected. But whether it's through human removal or through biological controls, both of those things working together, if you could reduce those populations of the trees themselves, it should have a direct impact on the spotted lanternfly as well.
Is there anything folks can do to help with eliminating Tree of Heaven?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So I recommend that first and foremost, you know, especially with dealing with spotted lanternfly and Tree of Heaven in northeast Pennsylvania, we don't really have a substantial population as of yet. But that being said, Tree of Heaven out of the two is much more prevalent, especially in, as you mentioned before, kind of disturbed areas, usually more of an urban setting. And what I typically recommend, and of course there's different methods, and it depends on the maturity of the tree as well, but I would highly recommend doing a method called hack and squirt, which involves taking a hatchet and cutting into the sapwood of the tree, the cambium layer, and spraying glyphosate, which is just Roundup if you want to use a brand name, into those wounds while keeping some of that sapwood intact. So that way the herbicide can flow between the crown of the tree and the roots, effectively killing the entire thing. A lot of times people do try to cut the tree down, which I would argue in the short term is a good thing, because, you know, if you're cutting down a mature tree, you're reducing the amount of seeds that are going into the environment. But the problem is that these trees are very adept at coming up from the root system. So you need to make sure that it's killed in its entirety. Otherwise, you're going to be dealing with a repeated problem.
And is that something to do at this time of year?
Yeah, so we're kind of getting towards the tail end of treatment. I would say it really depends on the area and kind of the conditions that we're dealing with. But that being said, I would typically recommend to treat before the end of October, which of course we're right on the line there. But typically, I would say the most optimal time of year for treatment is during the growing season. So I'd say from June, basically up until the end of, I'd say middle end of October.
And for the spotted lanternfly, are we still seeing this prevalence here? Is it decreasing at all? And is the advice still to step on it?
Yeah. So the good thing is in the areas that spotted lanternfly first appeared in Berks County, that was back in 2014, that they're noticing a collapse in the populations from its epicenter. So it's still spreading as it moves outward, but the good thing is it's kind of creating like a donut effect where that initial area is starting to kind of experience a little bit of die-off. But that being said, we're in that territory where it's starting to move into a little bit more, and where we're based out of Honesdale, we are starting to see a little bit more of an established population. But that's why we're trying to encourage people when they're spotted, no pun intended, to report them and to kill them on site. And as I mentioned before, right now I would say even more than ever, focus on identifying Tree of Heaven and removing that before these populations have the potential to really root themselves.
And are you asking folks to alert your office or elsewhere about spotting the spotted lanternfly?
Yeah, of course. So you could definitely reach out to us at the Wayne Conservation District. But if you want to kind of, go around us, you can certainly just contact your local Penn State Extension office or go to their website. And usually they will have a pretty easy means to navigate to a spotted lanternfly tracker where you could submit the information of what you saw, where you saw it, and kind of go from there.
And there's more information at the Wayne County, Pennsylvania government website. I'm going to give it a go as we close here. We've been talking to Trevor Tuchodlowski.
Very close. Tuchodlowski.
Tuchodlowski. Okay. I'll practice more. He's the Wayne Conservation District's forest specialist, talking to us about the Tree of Life and the spotted lanternfly. Thank you so much, Trevor.
Thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, a new bookstore in Ellenville that aims to be a community hub as well as a place to get some good reads. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale. Dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week on our show, we dig into what it means to cook by feel and how you can learn to ditch recipes and just wing it. We talk with Vivian Howard, star of A Chef's Life, and scientist-turned-cook Nick Sharma. That's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11, on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Common Good is a new bookstore in Ellenville that not only carries books, but also aims to be a community hub where visitors can congregate, collaborate, connect, and unwind. Joining us now is owner Matthew Goldman of The Common Good. Hello.
Hey, Tim. Really great to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about this idea, and I guess this is reflected in the name, too, The Common Good, about not just being a place where folks can get coffee and books, but a place to be a community hub. What was the motivation there?
Oh, man. I mean, that's everything. It's honestly everything. As I go back, I think, all of my professional endeavors are really united by a belief in the power of music and art and the stories of our nation to build bridges to one another and to really help us expand our circles of compassion. I was a bookseller in my early 20s. I spent years on the road as a touring musician, and then I was a Hair on Fire history teacher and a high school administrator. And I just, all of these things, I really just have a profound faith in the power of people coming together, over books, history, and music. And that's what I'm looking to do here. I see this as a natural extension of my life's work so far.
And also, you mentioned that it's giving back a little to the region that's meant so much to your family. Talk a little bit about how the Catskills region and Ellenville in particular has been a refuge for your family and your paternal grandparents as well.
I really appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah. So some folks have asked, like, why did you come to Ellenville? And this space has been a refuge. This space has provided a lot of respite and joy to my family. After surviving the Holocaust, my paternal grandparents moved to New Jersey in 1949, lived in Paterson, New Jersey, worked factory jobs, and, like a lot of other Jewish folks in the area, found a lot of great times up here in the Catskills, in the bungalow colonies in the 50s, 60s. And so, my dad and mom continued that legacy with my brother and me, went to Kutcher Sports Academy, in the 90s. And, you know, my wife and I have been coming up here for years. And so that's really kind of like the history. But then, you know, we just discovered that there's so much great stuff going on in Ellenville. We put some roots down, bought a house here about almost 3 years ago. You know, there's just a lot going on here. You know, Morning Sunshine, Tori and Natalia, you know, Jess at Everything Nice in her record store. And of course, you know, Barb at Top Shelf, Alpanabawa, and Borschtfeld Museum and Borschtfeld Film Fest this weekend. There's just so much yeah. happening here. You know, there's just like an electricity, and we just wanted to be part of the team, really.
And it seems like the community gave back to you. You started a Kickstarter earlier this year to fund some of this. And how did that go? What was the response from the community for a place like this in Ellenville?
Yeah, great question. You know, it is hard to open up a bookstore. I think one of the things I've learned is it is enormously hard to start a business. I always imagined it would be hard to start a business. I just didn't imagine it would be this hard. And one of the hard things was really raising the funds. And we have, you know, some private investors, but we also had a lot of folks that reached out and said, you know, I believe in this idea. You know, I believe in this thing called a third space where we can all just come together. There's no price of admission, where we can hear authors speak, where we can come for free events, for children's programming. We believe in this too. You know, we don't want to come in as investors in a project like this, but, you know, can we provide something? So we wanted to provide a vehicle for everybody, you know, to invest themselves in the project and also get a little sweet merch, get a little like, you know, frontline sweet merch back too. So that, yeah, it was very touching, very, very touching and heartwarming to feel the response.
Another great thing about this area is that there are several other independent bookstores around, and some of them relatively new. You've got Ratty Books for Kids here in Jeffersonville down the road from us.
Oh, yeah.
The Hound Books in Roscoe. Of course, One Grand Books in Narrowsburg. Did you get support from some of the other independent booksellers in the area?
Oh, big time. Postmark Books. I mean, Rough Draft, Spotty Dog. There have been so many heartwarming things about this whole project, but you know, one of the things I wasn't expecting was just how many people reached out to say, hey, really great to have you in the neighborhood. Reach out if you need anything. Yeah. All the folks you mentioned and more, you know, it's been really gratifying.
I mean, it's amazing to think that there are more than there are just so many more out there, which is awesome to have in the area and just shows a little bit more about the fabric of the community. You have your grand opening Halloween party today.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that and then also about some of the community-minded events that you're planning for folks.
Yeah, sure. So tonight, big grand opening party. We've got a ribbon cutting at 1 o'clock with the Chamber of Commerce. Really excited to get out there with my wife and my two kids and take a picture out in front. And then from 5 to 6:30, it's kid time. We've got, superhero mask making, Halloween spooky bookmark making, free stickers, free candy, and a costume contest prize giveaway. And then later it's the adults time again, you know, costume contest. We've got some really, really tasty themed cocktails that our bar staff has cooked up, some wonderful concoctions. And, you know, Libro FM has contributed to the event. We're giving away some really awesome audiobook bundles for those who are coming with particularly spooky costumes. So it's going to be a blast. It's going to be a riot. Really hope folks come out. But then more broadly, you know, as you mentioned, Tim, we're really trying to build a space that, you know, inspires and advances folks' curiosities and interests across generations. So, you know, whether it's book club offerings, whether it's, you know, author events, knit and sips. I will say I really want to work specifically with students and teachers of the local area. You know, as a coming out of education, I just can't not work with kids. You know what I'm saying? So we'll be having open mics once a month. Will be reserved only for students of the Ellenville area. So we're getting that kicked off next month. We'll have trivia nights, open mics, lectures, maybe even some adult history classes if I'm really feeling up to it. But you know, really the sky is the limit. And as I tell folks when they come in, you know, this is a starting point. You know, I'm really, really proud of what we're offering and what we've built, but we want to hear what folks want. And I'll say, just if there are any teachers out there listening on their prep periods, we're going to have an educators night next week. We'll get that information out there. But I really want to know how we can support the work that they're doing in their classrooms and really elevate the kiddos who are in front of them every day.
And a starting point, you just started. You soft opening on October 20th, regular hours started last Thursday, the 24th, the grand opening tonight. You also had some reels on Instagram about how to open a bookstore. So how do you feel about opening a bookstore now that you're here? How does that feel?
God. It feels amazing. It feels amazing. You know, if you were to ask me like how I'm doing today, first I would probably start by saying I'm a little heartbroken. My Yankees really broke my heart last night.
You and a lot of other people feel the same way today, I think.
Man, I thought we were heading towards another game for sure. So definitely heartbroken. But, you know, I wake up every day now and I say, my God, I own a bookstore. I own a bookstore. And I'm enormously grateful to all the folks who helped make it happen, my wife especially. But, you know, my designer, Samantha, Creatures of Place, John Glagola, Studio Glagola, just master mill workers and his whole team. I'm just feeling enormously grateful. It's been a whirlwind. It's been so hard, but I am so excited for what's ahead.
Well, congratulations to you and the team there. We've been talking to Matthew Goldman from the Common Good Bookstore. There's more information at thecommongoodny.com and on Facebook and Instagram, I think, at thecommongoodny. Their grand opening spooktacular is tonight. Matthew, thanks so much, and good luck there in Ellenville.
Thanks for your interest in our store, Tim. Look forward to welcoming you in. It's been great.
All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll learn more about On Belonging, the series of short plays debuting at the Tustin Theater in Narrowsburg this weekend. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on The Waggle of the Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, our series featuring covers of songs from American songwriters brings us to the songs of Tom Waits. And believe me, these are a real treat. So join me, please, for folky covers of Tom Waits songs on Sunday afternoon at 3.
We are in the final stretch of this historic election season. Former President Trump and Vice President Harris are making their last big push before it all comes to a head on November 5th. I'm Scott Detrow. Join us for live special coverage of Election Night 2024 from NPR News. We will bring you the latest as the polls close and the vote totals roll in, with the context and analysis you need to stay informed.
NPR's Election Night coverage starts at 7 Tuesday with local and regional updates throughout the night, only from Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank, celebrating 110 years of service this year, offering deposit and loan products for all your banking needs. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. And support comes from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Delaware Valley Arts Alliance is presenting On Belonging at the Tustin Theater in Narrowsburg this weekend. On Belonging is an initiative by Standing People Together Theater designed to draw on the voices of the community. The project was developed in part through funding provided by a Sullivan 180 grant. The evening showcases the wealth of writing and acting talent in the region, with performances of four original plays written by local playwrights, each exploring a different response to the idea of belonging, or not, in a particular place and time. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi interviewed Eric Feinblatt and Carolyn Bally of Standing People Together, project creators, and playwrights Cynthia Nash, Tiffany Esteb, Greg Thomas, and Laura Moran.
Good morning, listeners, and welcome to Radio Chatskill. Today I have with me Eric and Caroline, and you may remember that we spoke back in April about a project they were initiating called On Belonging, and they asked for submissions for 15-minute plays on the theme of belonging. So that has come to fruition, and there will be coming up this weekend at the Tustin Theater, Saturday the 2nd at 7 p.m. and Sunday the 3rd at 2 p.m. Let's start with the initiators of this project. What was it you hoped to glean from the subject of belonging?
So it was an interesting project. We were initially approached Sullivan 180 because we felt belonging would address their focus on community well-being and health. And we thought that that creating a production around the concept of belonging and people's interpretations of that would speak to their focus and to their mission. And subsequently, we got also funded, not funded actually, they're producing, DVAA has taken this on as one of their projects for the autumn, and they're actually producing the play because they felt that there was a connection between theater and health and a healthy community and the well-being of a community. So that was something that really was in the back of our mind and came to fruition by our two funding partners.
Caroline, what were the parameters that were set when you requested these submissions?
We asked for plays of 15 minutes or less and no more than 5 characters, and of course on the topic of on belonging. So other than that, there were no parameters, and we got a really wide variety of entries.
We wound up with 25 submissions, which was remarkable.
Yes.
All from local playwrights. And we had a committee of 4 people who chose, whittled down the selection to 4 plays.
And you have local actors as well.
Everyone involved is local.
Yes, we're booming with talent here in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. And we have some of the playwrights here with us. Cynthia Nash, tell us about your play. The name of it is?
The Crossing.
And?
The Crossing was inspired by the Skinner's Falls Bridge, which is endangered, and about its relationship to our community, which cares about the preservation of the bridge. So in terms of belonging, the idea of place is very powerful in belonging, but the presence of people in that place is also part of belonging, and that is integral to the dynamics of the play.
And how many characters are in your play?
I can't remember. How many characters
there
do I have?
There are many. They're only played by four actors,
but there are about 7 or 8 characters.
Easily.
And Tiffany, you have a 15-minute play. Can you tell us the name of it and what your focus is?
The name of it is Diner. There's 3 characters. And the focus of it is, well, belonging, but kind of I wanted to get at the arbitrariness of whether we belong or not sometimes, but at the same time juxtapose with how critical it is that we do belong.
Have you written plays before?
I've been focusing on writing scripts for TV and film mostly, but also have dabbled in playwriting. I wrote this specifically for this project with the idea of belonging in this community in mind.
We have Greg Thomas. Greg isn't here today to speak with us, but can you tell us about his play?
His play is called The Birthday List, and he originally wrote it as one act of a larger play, but it is also, it works very well as a standalone. And it involves 2 really good friends, one of whom is transitioning from a man to a woman. And it's a beautiful exposition of the relationship that they have and have had and how this new relationship is forming.
And our final playwright is Laura Moran. Hi, Laura. Tell us what you created.
Hi, Valerie. Thanks so much for this interview about the plays. I think On Belonging is a really special kind of project that's happening, and I'm excited to be part of it. The play that I wrote is called Cathedral, and it's a 10-minute play. And the title actually is kind of a metaphor for how change has to be built over generations in the way that a cathedral can't be done quickly. You know, usually it takes generations and lots of work to make a cathedral be built. And likewise, sometimes in our families, generational changes just take time. So it's a play about a father and a son. He's a blue-collar worker. They're both working on the job, building a cathedral, moving stones back and forth, back and forth. But the son has a chance to pursue higher education. And so this is the moment when he's, you know, telling his father about his opportunities. So, and it really spotlights the emotional under the subtext, the emotional subtext of these kind of conversations, when what the parent is working for is to have the next generation be better, but when that moment actually comes, it's a little bit difficult. You know, what actually changes when economics change? So it also is dealing a little bit with the pressure of economics, the pressure of the working class. Do we stay in it? Do we break out of it? There's definitely value. There's many questions that are posed and considered in this short little intimate play.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to us about it, and I look forward to seeing it this weekend.
Great. Well, we'll see you there, Valerie.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
One of the most important things, especially the way that we Standing People Together Theatre work, is with community. So it's not just about plays being produced and then an audience coming in and viewing them. Obviously, this case, we've got a gorgeous opportunity with the playwrights as well, bringing in that part. But the way that we also produce the plays involves a lot of audience interaction where possible. So we had a play reading of the plays in June to award the playwrights, but also to have the audience give us a little bit of feedback about the first play reading. And we also had a session in the Catskill Art Walk recently where audiences were able to see two of the plays, Cathedral and Birthday List, in the sort of formative stages, just a couple of scenes, and some of the ways that we work with character, some of the ways in which we try and develop a real meaningful relationships. And the audience shared their views on the sorts of things they've experienced in relation to the same sorts of belonging issues. And so we get a very, very vibrant idea of how community can be impacted and can impact theatre.
So the process itself creates a community of belonging.
Right. Well, I think that's what Sullivan 180 responded to, the way that we actually work. And they understand that we bring the community into the production as much as possible. We also workshopped two of the plays, Cynthia's play and Tiffany's play, at Ron Litke's Eisau Arts sessions.
Yes.
So Ron gives sessions every Thursday at the Narrowsburg Union for playwrights and actors. And both of these plays were, I don't know that they were developed there, but they, at one, during their development, we worked with, you know, with the two playwrights.
I was going to say it would be nice to shout out the actors as well.
Right. Cass Collins, many of your listeners may know.
Yes.
Strong presence in the community. Nick Lopez is one of the actors. A young actress named Erin Gilmore.
And Ellie Jay.
Ellie Jay, a.k.a. Clown Daddy. And me, Eric Feinblatt. I will be acting in this as well.
And the directors?
Caroline and myself.
Well, thank you all for all your hard work and bringing these wonderful theatrical events to our community.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Valerie.
And that's culture reporter Valerie Manzi talking to the folks behind On Belonging at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance at the Tustin Theater in Harrisburg this weekend. More information at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. And before we go, of course, it's Halloween and multiple agencies and law enforcement agencies and others are reminding folks to stay safe and make sure the little ghosts and goblins stay safe this Halloween. For drivers, be sure to stay alert. Keep your attention on the road. Avoid distractions and put down your phone. Smartphones and handheld electronic devices take your eyes off the road and may distract your attention. Always follow posted speed limits, especially in areas of heavy pedestrian traffic, like school zones and neighborhoods where some of those trick-or-treaters might appear suddenly. Be extra vigilant in driveways. Be mindful of pedestrians when pulling into and out of driveways, especially if you're backing up. You can see people trick-or-treating, perhaps, entering your path without you knowing it. Always yield to pedestrians in a crosswalk and don't pass stopped vehicles at a crosswalk. And, of course, slow down. Trick-or-treaters, be visible and wear reflective clothing such as wristbands and shoes. Carry a flashlight, glow stick, or place reflective tape on your costumes. Be safe and join other families in walking together. It makes everyone more visible. And use your eyes and ears. Don't use headphones or play with handheld devices when crossing the street. Don't walk on the road whenever possible. Stay on sidewalks or the side of the road using marked crosswalks if available in the rural areas. And never run out into the street. Be sure again to look left and right and left again before entering the roadway, and everybody will have a safe, happy Halloween. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. Every Friday night, it's my goal to bring WJFF listeners great music. Music from all over the world. Stuff that's been lost in the archives and needs to be heard. Classics you already knew you loved. And new stuff from established and emerging artists. All right here on The Mixtape, WJFF Radio Catskill.
Friday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. We're streaming live at WJFFradio.org, and you can also ask your smart speaker to play Radio Catskill. Today's weather, partly sunny, breezy, and very warm, unusually warm for trick-or-treating, high of 74. Cloudy and mild tonight with a brief shower or two late, a low 57. Tomorrow, breezy with that morning shower possible, high 68, and 40 for the low Friday, and noticeably cooler weather on the way for Saturday and Sunday. Saturday's high, only 47, but sunny. Sunny to partly cloudy on Sunday, and that high, 52. On Point is coming up next at 11.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
This is Radio Catskill. Listen to us on your smart speaker. Just ask your smart speaker to play WJFF Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, an effort to remind the country of the humanity in all of us. I'm Isabel Braverman, and we are pairing up strangers in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania to have conversations, not debates. Get to know your neighbors. Let's take one small step away from division and toward each other. Sign up at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. On air, live streaming at WJFFradio.org. Ask your smart speaker to play Radio Catskill. Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.